This recording is from the ACA World Convention that was held virtually in May of 2021. The ACA World Service Organization is grateful to all who contributed to making this convention happen, as well as to all who participated. ACA is an anonymous program. Please respect the anonymity of those that participated in the event. To learn more about the ACA Fellowship, please visit us online at adultchildren.org, where you can find information for newcomers, as well as free literature for download. Information about doing service in the ACA Fellowship can be found at acawso.org and acawsoec.org. To purchase literature or to make a Seventh Tradition contribution, please go to shop.adultchildren.org. We hope you enjoy the following recording from the 6th Annual World Convention, Global Recovery, in May 2021.
Thank you. All right. Well, hi, my name is Julianne, and I am a recovering adult child, and I would like to welcome all of you to Working the Steps from a Secular Perspective, presented by We Agnostics ACA. And I am going to turn us over to Coy at this point. And Kyle, if you would please go to the next slide.
Anonymity. Please be sure to rename yourself on the participant screen to show only your first name, last name, initial, and country. Please remember our essential self-principle of anonymity. This workshop is being broadcast around the world and will be recorded on audio for future distribution. Therefore, we ask that you do not record any video, audio, or pictures of the convention session. We also ask that you do not share the link to this conference. We ask each member request their own access to the AWC. This allows everyone to acknowledge our common commitment to protecting the personal anonymity of all attendees. For the meeting safety, during the meeting, only the active speakers will be unmuted. Video, microphones, and chat will generally be disabled for all viewers. This is to ensure a safe listening experience for all. Next slide there, Kyle. Thank you. Please remember that in order to honor others and maintain healthy boundaries, we do not interrupt, refer to, or comment on what another person has said. This is important because adult children come from family backgrounds where feelings and perceptions were judged as wrong or defective. In ACA, each person may share without fear of judgment. We accept without comment what others say because it is true for them. We work to take more responsibility in our own lives rather than giving advice to others. We keep the focus on ourselves and share about our own experience and feelings by speaking from the I, me, or my position. Also, what you hear at this meeting should remain at the meeting. We do not talk about another person's story or experience to others. Please respect the anonymity of all those who share with us today. Next. We meet to share the experiences we had as children growing up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. That experience infected us then, and it affects us today. There is only one requirement for ACA membership, and that is the desire to recover from the effects of family dysfunction. Please join me in opening this session with the ACA Serenity Affirmation. While we encourage you to use your preferred language in beginning, at We Agnostics, we begin the Serenity Affirmation with, "Today I seek the serenity," and we invite you to join us. Taking a deep breath, and we will begin. Today I seek the serenity, to accept the people,
I cannot change.
The courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one is me. Erica will now take us through the laundry list.
Hi, everybody. The laundry list. Number one, we became isolated and afraid of people and authority figures. Two, we became approval seekers and lost our identity in the process. Three, We are frightened by angry people and any personal criticism. 4, we either become alcoholics, marry them, or both, or find another compulsive personality, such as a workaholic, to fulfill our sick abandonment needs. 5, we live life from the viewpoint of victims, and we are attracted by that weakness in our love and friendship relationships. 6, we have an overdeveloped sense of responsibility, and it is easier for us to be concerned with others rather than ourselves. This enables us not to look too closely at our own faults, etc. 7, we get guilt feelings when we stand up for ourselves instead of giving in to others. Next slide, please. 8, we became addicted to excitement. 9, we confuse love and pity and tend to love people we can pity and rescue. We have stuffed our feelings from our traumatic childhoods and have lost the ability to feel or express our feelings because it hurts so much. This is denial. We judge ourselves harshly and have a very low sense of self-esteem. We are dependent personalities who are terrified of abandonment and will do anything to hold on to a relationship in order not to experience painful abandonment feelings, which we receive from living with sick people who were never there emotionally for us. Alcoholism is a family disease, and we became para-alcoholics and took on the characteristics of that disease, even though we did not pick up the drink. And finally, para-alcoholics are reactors rather than actors. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. Thank you, Coy. For those of you that have just come into the room, and I saw a couple in chat talking about not being able to see the participants lists or turn on your video, this particular room is a webinar room, and only the panelists can have their microphones unmuted or their cameras on. So it's not any problem that you're having on your end. Okay. We are going to go through the steps from a secular perspective. One of the things that what we thought we would start with, though, is telling you a little bit about who we are, why the We Agnostics meetings is so important to us. And then we're going to talk a little bit about why it's hard for us to go to most regular ACA meetings. I'm going to start. So once again, my name is Julianne. I am a recovering adult child of a dysfunctional family. I was raised in a double alcoholic household that was filled with the ghostly remnants of generational dysfunction. I grew up on military bases where the entire culture revolved around alcohol. Drinking was a family lifestyle. In 1985, when I was 24 years old, my mom came to me and said, "I think you're an alcoholic." And I was such a good codependent that I started going to AA. She went to Al-Anon. I didn't think I was an alcoholic, but I knew something was wrong with me. I wasn't happy. I couldn't maintain relationships with other people. I had explosive anger issues. I was living a very fear-based life, and I was constantly anxious. Now, years later, my mom is 36 years sober in AA. My father died in 2015 of the disease of alcoholism. I've seen both sides of the disease, long-term recovery and death, and I'm here in ACA. I am the codependent adult child. Now I'd like to introduce you to Salem.
Hey guys, my name is Salem and I'm a mess. I am an autistic, non-binary, pansexual atheist who was raised in the Deep South by evangelical Christians. My parents are so proud. No, they're not. They're not proud. They think I'm going to hell. I first realized that I was depressed around the age of 10. And after a couple years of nagging my mother and telling her over and over again that the Zoloft ad in her Better Home and Garden magazine was describing how I felt, I was finally allowed to go to therapy. Since then, it's been about 20 some odd years of digging through clinical depression and anxiety, bipolar 2, CPTSD, and all of the lovely little things that come from having a narcissistic alcoholic father and a perfectionistic mother in an extremely religious environment. My life has been a series of closet doors to kick open. Science and reason are the driving forces of my recovery. So about 3 months ago, when my therapist suggested ACA to help with community and moral support, I said, I don't know about that. I said, I don't think that it's going to be helpful for me to be told that I'm helpless and that I need Jesus and that I need to give up my power and trust some unknown force. And she said, no, you can find a secular group. And I said, I will try. I got on the list and typed in secular, and We Agnostics was the first thing that popped up. I have not once in this group felt shamed for my sexual orientation, for my occupations, for my socio-political views, or for any of the things that society as a whole and religion in general shames me for. It has been very, very helpful. The diversified approach that we take to the steps has been like a very important facet of my recovery. And that's why I'm here. Next, we have Erica.
Hi guys, I'm Erica, adult child of dysfunction, mental illness, also bipolar. I didn't think there was alcoholism until I spoke to my mom recently, and she said my dad was definitely an alcoholic. So how about that for denial? I mean, the whole laundry list fits. So, I mean, I've been trying countless things. I could talk your ear out off about all the things that I've tried: Christianity, Buddhism, pagan options. I ended up getting a 4-year degree in biopsychology, like all about what happens to the body from trauma. I did all of these things. I joined a meditation center. I did service there. I did special events and intensives there. I really, really tried hard at a normal 12-step, like honestly, it was AA, not ACA, about 7 years ago. And I tried so hard. I was more diligent than I've been about anything in my life to try to turn my will over. But the closest I could get was becoming willing to believe that something could, but not that something would. And I threw myself into everything that I could about that 12-step program too, the literature, hours in the fellowship, in and out of meetings. And my heart began to unthaw, and like it really, it's corny as it sounds, like my heart was warming, and it was so wonderful to see these people that I cared about and be able to appreciate that I cared about them, like get that glow of recovery, because there's nothing, you can't fake that recovery glow of like when someone has made it through that 12 steps and that serenity. That's what I wanted. But I ended up feeling lonely because I just couldn't get past the higher power concept. No matter how hard I tried and how humble I made myself, I just couldn't get past it. And I knew that there was a lot of good in the 12 steps, but I needed to be able to dig into it more. And now I have joined ACA. Out of all the looking I went, all the searching, I finally found it through serendipity on a comedy podcast, and it fits so well. And what I really appreciate about this presentation and studying the steps in this way is that it's almost like a prism. Like I get to look at each step from numerous aspects and facets, and it's just so much more accessible, because now I can say honestly that I'm in step 4. Like I'm working a step 4. I have done number 3. Like I believe in the fellowship. I just can't do a higher power like that. And I'm so grateful to be able to be doing this. And I can also say like I'm living step 12 here today, because I absorbed that from the first round of 12 steps, is the importance of service. So thank you for having me. I hope you guys can be as helped by this presentation as I was. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Alan. I've been in ACA for about 9 months now. I tried it years ago, but was repulsed by the religious phrasing and concepts in the ACA literature and the groups that I found. Also, some of the language is and was shaming rather than descriptive. And in general, it's not inclusive for persons who live outside a white male Christian perspective. Some of us need recovery from childhood abuse, including religious trauma as well. I have tried atheistic, agnostic, pagan, Buddhist, and a few other directions to try to recover. In these groups, I haven't seen any welcome for someone like me. I seem to be too far outside the box. I've been isolated and depressed since childhood. I wasn't allowed to have friends, to make choices, to do anything that I wanted to. A very religious and militaristic, controlling family. Both of my parents were mentally ill. So I've been isolated and depressed, and I didn't even know it until I was in my mid-20s. So I started working on it. Last August, a counselor friend who knew of some of my infections from my traumatic childhood experiences suggested I try a group that was for ACA beginners. So I did. They used the stock religious phrasing of ACA, and there were a lot of religious references in their meetings and in their literature. The meetings were large and online and initiated by and full of people who use religious words and phrasings that rubbed me the wrong way. The meeting wasn't welcoming, and it wasn't feeling like a safe space for people like me. After a few months of that, I was about ready to stop attending ACA meetings again. But I searched online on the ACA website, and I found the We Agnostics group and a great description of who was welcome in the group. And boy, that included me. So I came in to that room. I'm here today only because I found a secular meeting that is open and it is inclusive for me. In the We Agnostics meetings, I don't have to fit anyone's preconceived notions of what they think I should be. I can be myself, and there I'm able to begin my recovery from the effects of childhood trauma caused by being raised in a highly dysfunctional family. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Coy?
Hey, everyone. I am Coy, and growing up in the Bible Belt, I grew up Methodist, spent time in a Pentecostal church, and also spent time in a non-denominational church that was pretty much Free Will Baptist. So I've had my share of the Christian faith. And I'm pretty new to ACA, and I'm pretty new to what many people call deconstruction of trying to figure out what I actually believe. So much so that, you know, only some very close friends know that I'm actually kind of where I'm at in my spiritual journey. And I found We Agnostics, much like the others. And I, for me, it's nice to be in a community that is open-minded, that's diverse, that has people from all different walks of life, different backgrounds, different spiritual perspectives, and knowing at the end of the day that I'm not going to be judged one way or the other for how I'm feeling as far as the ACA work or for my spiritual walk as well. So with that, I will pass to myself into talking about re-traumatization, which is the next portion of our presentation. So re-traumatization occurs when a person re-experiences a previously traumatic event, either consciously or unconsciously. This can be caused by stressors that are similar to the environment or circumstances of the original trauma. Listening to religious words or inferences can cause religious re-traumatization. Symptoms can arise when someone is thinking about the event that traumatized them, even if they weren't specifically prompted to think about it. Listening to the ACA steps being read can be so triggering that that those alone contribute to re-traumatization. It's important to remember that people want to feel believed and want to be asked how they want to be helped. We Agnostics is an important contribution to ACA because we provide a space where people who experienced religious trauma can feel believed and supported. We're going to spend the next few minutes talking about how ACA can feel exclusionary to those of us who experienced religious trauma. Salem will start first.
Thank you, Coy. Yes, it's an unfortunate fact that religion has been used time and time again to mask and facilitate a number of abuses, some narcissistic abuse, sexual abuse, homophobia, racism, just to name a few. And for those of us who experience trauma in the context of a religion, that religion has been used to justify those abuses. And it makes it difficult for us to recognize we've been abused. And then when we do, guess what happens? We go ask for help, and those very ideas are reinforced to us. As a member of the LGBT community, as a sexually liberated individual, every time I ask for help, I have to cross my fingers and hope that whoever I'm asking is not going to shame me for being gay or shame me for not adhering to what they see as moral or proper forms of relationships. I avoided 12-step programs for years because I did not want to once again be shamed for all of these aspects that are part of me. And the only reason I'm in one right now is because I found a secular approach that helps. It allows me to just be myself and just be accepted and not have to be meeting somebody else's standards, because that's the reality for somebody like me who's very marginalized, is that I'm always expected to be meeting somebody else's standards. And that means that safe spaces for me are very limited. Thank you.
Before we go to Alan, Kyle, would you please stop the PowerPoint presentation for a few minutes? Thank you. Alan?
Hi, Alan again. I don't have an alcoholic background. I'm an adult who, as a child, was isolated from peers and adults in an extremely controlling, dysfunctional family, with God and religion used as weapons of additional control. I was raised in an evangelical religion. I was taught to believe in an angry, punitive, judgmental, misogynistic, white male God living in heaven in the clouds with streets paved with gold. He listens for all eternity to harp music and praise from us unworthy creatures who he created with serious flaws. He has total control over my path in life. An organization telling me I should work their recovery program until I come to love this God, and that I can't recover from childhood abuse by this God without this God, drops me right back into a childhood of fear and adrenaline spikes and of others having angry and abusive power over me. These are some of the religious words and phrases used in ACA that trigger that response in me. God, higher power, power greater than ourselves. Turn our will over to God, the care of God, as we understand God. Moral, we admitted to God, we humbly asked God. We sought through prayer to improve our conscious contact with God. God's will for us, God's breath, spiritual awakening, spiritual steps. I need to work steps from a secular perspective in an agnostic and inclusive group to recover from my childhood religious and other traumas that were put upon me. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Alan. Again, my name is Julianne, and I am a recovering adult child. I had a whole bunch of stuff that I wanted to say about my childhood and growing up Jewish and having swastikas spray painted on the side of our house and having my Star of David ridiculed. And how I became an atheist. And I think I'm going to skip all of that. And I'm going to go to how important to me literature is. Literature is often the first introduction that people have to ACA. And the Big Red Book is definitive in its stance about God. The Big Red Book basically says that not only does God exist, but I must believe that I am a child of God in order to reclaim my true nature. And I figured I was never going to heal my inner child if a belief in God was required because I'm an atheist. I've been in and out of the rooms of 12-step recovery since the mid-1980s, and I have been shamed more in the rooms of recovery than anywhere else in my life. And mostly that shame has been around being an atheist, because you are told in the rooms of recovery that you cannot recover if you don't have God. So as far as I'm concerned, our literature is dismissive at best and punitive at worst of the non-believer, the alternative believer, those who do not believe in a white male Christian God. You can pretty much tell that the original literature was written by those living in a Western industrialized nation. So as an atheist, what was I to do? Well, rewrite the book. So I did. Page by page, line by line, question by question, I studied the writings, I crossed out, I rewrote, I restructured the literature. I took the principles of the steps, the underlying core intent, and made sure that those were still there. Well, I dumped all the holier than thou, you must have God, shame on you if you don't, crap. Over the years, I had helped other women rewrite the steps, mostly because they had a problem with the male gender of the steps. When you've experienced sexual abuse, often the male gender is really hard for you to work through when you're reading the steps. I know it was for me. So words are important. Words can wound deeply, or they can open wounds that you thought had scabbed over or patched up. And from that sprung something that I'm now calling the 12 Protocols for Living. Originally, they were the 12 steps reimagined for the adult child. I've decided on 12 Protocols for Living. It's a complete reworking of the 12 steps from a secular perspective, written specifically for the adult child. Because re-traumatizing people attempting to recover from a childhood of shame, blame, and guilt seemed kind of counterproductive to me. And because of that, thus was born We Agnostics. We Agnostics started as a safe place for those of us who do not believe in God, or who are unsure or questioning or simply seeking a different way of looking at recovery. In the description on the ACA website, it says, We Agnostics is open to everyone in ACA. If you are atheist, agnostic, a free thinker, humanist, uncomfortable with the religious language in ACA literature, questioning what higher power means to you, or simply looking for a new meeting, then this group might be for you. We believe in personal accountability and that ACA recovery can be successful with or without God. We acknowledge that a Judeo-Christian higher power does not work for everyone. If you'd like a more secular approach to the 12 steps, we invite you to join us. So now we're going to walk through the 12 Protocols for Living, and I'll say here what we say at every We Agnostics meeting. At this meeting, we study ACA literature and secular versions of the 12 steps. We do not promote or recommend any book or wording over those in the Big Red Book. This is simply to provide a foundation to begin discussion of the steps from a secular perspective. Kyle, if you would please start the screen share with step one. And Salem, would you please walk us through working steps 1, 2, and 3 from a secular perspective?
Yes, ma'am. The good news is, if you're in a 12-step program, you've probably already touched on a lot of the things in the first three steps. Step one, insight, honesty. To me, this has nothing to do with admitting anything about powerlessness. This is me recognizing that I've just been rolling in the wrong jurisdiction. I've been trying to control others when I should be looking inside myself. I've been trying to change the world when what I should be doing is figuring out why I am the way that I am before I can figure out why others are the way that they are. So when I come to the conclusion that what I've been doing is not working, it's a light bulb moment. We've all heard that definition of insanity. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, we have to change what we're doing if we want a different result. What I have is a set of adaptations to an environment that is dysfunctional. That leaves me dysfunctional. I have to change that. And the first step to that is recognizing it, which brings us to step two. Next slide. Higher power, yay. Higher power to me is not God. It's not something divine. It's the thoughts and resources outside of myself. It's the collectivism of a group, of a society. I can't figure all this stuff out by myself, within myself, in my own head. I need help. This is about asking for help, not from some sky daddy, but from other people. Because one thing you learn about feeling alone in your struggle is that you're not. You get in a room full of people who get it, and suddenly you realize what higher power is. It's just not being alone. It's having a group of protesters instead of you just standing in front of that tank. It's having a whole community of people fighting for the same thing instead of just you screaming into the void. So that brings us to step three. Next slide. You have to accept that this is the pickle you're in and that things have to change. You have to decide that you're going to do something about it. You're not powerless. You just have to try something different. And if you want to learn something different, it means you have to listen instead of arguing. It means you have to be open instead of shut off. You're not turning some power over to a deity or to the masses. You're saying, I'm willing to try something new. I'm willing to hear what others have to say about this. I'm willing to adjust my view of myself, of others, of how the world works, and come up with a new strategy. And if you're in a 12-step group, chances are you've already thought through some of these things and come to some of these conclusions. And then the real work begins with step four. Take it away, Julianne.
Thank you, Salem. You know what I've noticed? It's real easy to get distracted by messages in chat when you're doing this. Step four. Most people get really terrified when they think about doing a fourth step. And, you know, when I first came into ACA, it was at this point that I went, time out. Why did we lift the AA steps wholesale and move them over to ACA? This is not an addiction program, okay? We are recovering from childhood trauma. And I don't, anybody who knows me knows I have a mouth on me. I'm going to apologize one time for my language and just keep on going. I don't owe a fucking amends to my parents. I don't. Okay. And if I'm looking at the way the original fourth step is written, wow, I'm having to make a fearless and moral inventory of me. Me is an issue, but me is an issue because of what happened to me in my childhood. And if I don't address what happened to me in my childhood, nothing is going to get better ever, because I had spent years in therapy and years in 12-step organizations, and I kept saying, something's missing, something's missing, something's missing. And it wasn't until I hit ACA and started going, oh, this is what's missing. That it was like, and I can't get there through a normal fourth step. It just wasn't working for me. So for me, it's important that I create a written and historical account of the people in my life as a child, both positively and who impacted me, both positively and negatively. This was critical for me. I can't just look at the negative things, right? That way leads to madness. I also had to look at the positive things. And then, and this is the critical point, I had to look at what are the stories that I am telling myself today, because it is those stories that is keeping me in the behavior that I am exhibiting as an adult. I tell myself stories, and I learned these stories in childhood. So the most important things that I can say about the fourth step are write the damn inventory, just sit down and start, put pen to paper, get it started. Embrace the suck, because it is gonna suck. Embrace the suck, keep moving. Have a support system, whether it's a sponsor or a fellow traveler, a step study group, a meeting where you've gotten to know people, because we know that connection is the cure for what ails us, right? Most of us were isolated in childhood, and we're working really hard to not be isolated because we're in ACA. That says we want something different than the way we've been doing it before we got here. And also, there is no perfect fourth step. Doesn't exist. What I've learned over the years is I come back around to my fourth step over and over again. Something will pop up in my life and I'll go, I'm going to write an inventory on that because that's going to make things a little bit easier for me. Build the connection. Look for the stories that you tell yourself. Get past the procrastination, even if it's just writing one word on a piece of paper, and move forward. Next step, Kyle. Step five. Well, now that I've written this inventory, I need to do something with it. I could just stick it in a drawer. I could walk away from it. And what has been found over the years of peer-to-peer 12-step connection is when I share my shame, my blame, my guilt with another human being, and you don't reject me, and you sit there and go, yeah, me too. I get it. I've been there. That opens the door for healing. That opens the door to let that blame just kind of ooze away from you. You know, we are not to blame for what happened to us in childhood. Finding that person that you can share your fifth step with, that's pretty critical as far as I'm concerned. We come into program and we don't know how to trust, right? Trust is really hard for us. And I've learned for me that trust is built by consistency over time. If you are consistent with me over time, I can learn to trust you. If you are personally accountable, I can learn to trust you. I had to spend a long time getting to know the people in program before I picked the person I wanted to do a fifth step with. I didn't just pick the first person. Okay. I'd love to say that I didn't test the person that I was going to do my fifth step with, right? You know, can you be trusted? If I tell you something, are you going to share it with other people? I'd love to say I didn't do that, and I did, because it was so important for me to make sure that my story wasn't going to be spread around to other people, because that would have devastated me. Make sure the person that you're going to share your fifth step with is worthy of your trust. And, you know, it's real easy to just talk about, I was the hero. I was the perfect child. I got straight A's. I, you know, was the little adult. It's real easy to gloss over a lot of the stuff that happened to us. And what I found for me is the most critically important thing to share in my fifth step are the stories I'm still telling myself today, because that's where my healing is going to come. When I'm honest with my fifth step partner about, I don't trust men because I learned to not trust men at my mother's knee, and so I'm sabotaging every interpersonal relationship I'm in with a man, because the story I tell myself when I meet someone new is, you are going to leave me and you are not trustworthy. That's scary for me to look at, and it's important for me to look at, because once I've done that, I can start healing. When I ignore it, I'm not going anywhere. So now that I've shared who I am and I've bared my soul, so to speak, now we're into step six. Next slide, Kyle. For me, steps 6 and 7 are the important steps in recovery, and they get glossed over. It's really interesting. You go to any addiction recovery meeting, and a lot of times 6 and 7 are glossed over. And it was really hard for me to accept how important they were, because so many times we talk about them in terms of character defects. And you know what? I'm not defective. I'm not. I have built defenses that I live my life behind so that you can't hurt me, right? So they are coping mechanisms. And these coping mechanisms are not serving me. If I think of them as defects of character, I run away from them. I can't look at them. It's too shaming. It's too blaming. It's too guilt-inducing. When I start going, I learned some bad coping mechanisms in childhood so that I could survive a situation that was really horrible. And my life's not horrible right now. I don't have to continue living by those coping mechanisms. That's when I started healing. So 6 and 7 are interesting for me because I have to look at my problematic behaviors. And there are two different steps. And that's the one thing that I caution people about. You can't work but I encourage you to not work two steps at the same time. So work step 6, right? Identify the coping mechanisms. You're not doing anything with them yet. You're just identifying them. This gives me an opportunity to start thinking about shifting my perspective about things. Why is this coping mechanism important in my life? What has it been doing for me? Because it's been doing something important for me, or I wouldn't still be using it. Okay. This helped me find a sense of acceptance of my coping mechanisms. And that I think is really important. When I pretend that my coping mechanisms aren't a part of me, then I have a hard time accepting them. And I can't really change it without acceptance. There is no change without awareness, and there is no change without acceptance. Okay. There's also an emotional release that comes about this time. You know, you had an emotional release in writing the inventory. You had an emotional release in telling your story. And now you're looking at, who do you want to be when you grow up? Who do you want to be? What kind of person do you want to be? Do you want to be the person that you learned how to be in childhood? The person that built all these coping mechanisms that you don't really like, or you wouldn't be in ACA? Or do you want to choose to be a specific kind of person? And that was presented to me that way. And I thought, you know, I want to figure out who I am. I want to learn how to be my authentic self. I don't know who my authentic self is. I had no idea when I first started working on adult child issues, what kind of music I liked, what kind of food that I liked, you know, what color did I like? What kind of clothes did I want to wear? I knew what you wanted me to like. I knew how to ask you what you liked. I didn't know what I liked. Step six is where this stuff started coming together for me. Next slide, please. Step seven. I have in my notes, it says, ah, and here is the magic. And you know, I really do believe that. Step seven, I've identified both the harmful and beneficial coping mechanisms I use. I courageously choose to keep what works and consciously challenge the stories I tell myself to release those that don't. Those are notes that I've written for myself about this step. I get to choose. I had no choice in my childhood. And because I had no choice in my childhood, I developed into a person who had no choice in adulthood. I really didn't. I was a raging codependent with severe insecurity, massive anxiety, and I would do anything to make sure that you didn't abandon me. There's no choice in that. There's no choice at all. Step seven is where I get to choose. I get to choose the behaviors I like. I get to choose the behaviors that I want to have in my life. I get to choose the kind of job I want, the kind of tattoos I want. Do I want tattoos? Do I want piercings? Do I want my hair blue? Do I want to wear blue jeans? Do I want to wear 4-inch high heels? You know, I get to choose. There's not some standard of society that I have to wedge myself into in order to be okay with who I am. This is the stage where I get to start going, I get to choose who I am. And you know what's going to get in my way of doing that? All those stupid coping mechanisms. Because every time I try to do something different with my life, I run slam up against a coping mechanism. The most important thing that I have learned in step seven is four words. Four words. Stop. Breathe, think, and then act. My entire life, I had been doing it backwards. I had been acting without thought. I had been stopping, mostly because of panic attacks. I had been hyperventilating, which really isn't breathing, by the way. And then I'd gotten around to thinking about what the heck was going on in my life. All backwards. In step seven, I challenge my thoughts. I challenge my behaviors. I decide what stories from my childhood I want to stay tied to. I get to choose what beliefs I still want to have. And mindfulness. Mindfulness is so critically important. I have a really hard time choosing my next right action when I'm not in the present moment. When I'm worrying about the way things used to be, or fretting about the way things could be, or consumed with, oh crap, what happens if? I'm not in this moment and I'm not making good decisions. Somebody said to me one time, change your thinking and you change your life. And I think that's very true, because thinking is a patterned behavior. The way I think about something is a very patterned thing. And moving out of that is really, really hard, and it takes a lot of courage. And so I talk a lot about steps 6 and 7 because they're so critically important to me in terms of changing how I think about myself, how I think about the world, and how I start moving forward in the world. Next slide, please. Which brings me to step 8. And 8 and 9 are very tied together. Step 8 in the original wording talks about making a list of all persons harmed and being willing to make amends to all of them. Yeah, that's crap. The first time through in ACA, as far as I'm concerned, the only amends I owe are to myself, and I am the only name on that list. Now, when I go through the steps a second time or a third time, then we can talk about other things. But this first time through, I'm it. I am the most important person to make amends to. Because remember, before I got here, I wasn't even thinking about myself. And now I'm learning about myself. And now I get to make amends to myself. And I get to grieve. I get to grieve the loss of my childhood. I get to grieve the loss of, for me, 50 plus years of not living the life I really wanted and didn't know how to acquire. Which leads me to step 9. Next slide, please. Steps 8 and 9 are two different steps, by the way. Step 8 is just making a list. You're not working the step 9 yet. You're not making amends. You're just making the list. Okay. Step 9 is where you actually make the amends. And here's something really, really important for most of us in ACA. I encourage everyone to make sure that the people that show up on your amends list are worthy of making an amends to. A lot of people come into program and they look down the list, they read the steps and they go, oh crap, my behavior, eek, eek, I must make amends now. And they start making amends to people. And that one, they don't know how to make an amends yet. Two, they don't know what they're really making an amends for. Three, these are not always people that are deserving of an amends. So my caution is just make sure the people on your list are worthy of making an amends too. Step 9 for me is all about making daily amends to me. That's where I have to start. I have to make amends to myself on a daily basis. And part of that is learning how to live my life with self-respect, love, and self-compassion. This is important. I hated me. I was a horrible human being. You know, you couldn't convince me otherwise. Nobody liked me. Everybody hated me. I had no friends. It took me a long time to figure out that I was pushing people away because I was terrified of them. I was terrified of human beings. And it was really hard for me to live in a world where I had to interact with other people. It has taken me a long time to actively learn how to have relationships with other human beings. And that's part of my amends to myself, is learning how to have healthy relationships with people. And I don't always get it right, you know? And so what I've had to do is learn how to say, I was wrong, I apologize, and I'm going to work to do it better. To myself, as well as to other people. Next slide, please. Step 10. I was told early in recovery that any step that has a 1 at the front of it is a step that you can work from day 1 in program. Okay? Any step that has a 1 in front of it. So step 10 is about looking at my behavior on a daily basis. Here's the thing. Step 10 does not say that you have to make an amends. People sometimes miss that. What it says is, I look at my behavior. I figure out what I did during the day that I didn't like the way I did it. And I promptly admit that, so that the next day I can start over again. I don't have to go to every person that I think I may have harmed that day. To me, it kind of pops into daily amends for living. You know, do it better the next day. I'm never going to do it perfectly. This is about being willing to look at my behavior, about being willing to dive deep into what is keeping me from being the person that I thought I wanted to be way back in step 6 and 7. You know, what's still hanging me up? When I get angry, when I get frustrated, what is tugging at that little part of me that still reacts volatilely out of fear? This is where I look at that on a daily basis. It's uncomfortable. And one of the best things that I did for myself is I got myself a 10th step partner. And for 30 days, we called each other every day and we read our 10th step to each other. And that was an incredible experience for me. Because one of the things that I put on my 10th step is I have this form that I fill out. And one of the questions I ask myself is, what are the stories I'm telling myself? And sure enough, more often than not, I still had some story from childhood that was popping up today that I was tripping over. Next slide, please. I would have to say that the 11th step is probably the one that I struggled with the most. The wording of it. This is one of the God steps. And, you know, the God steps are just really hard for me. I wanted to not believe how important meditation was for my recovery. And I found out meditation's not what I thought it was, and it's actually very beneficial for me. I wanted to think that I could just blow past this step. Step 11 for me has become very much about improving my relationship with myself. In a way that the other steps hadn't done. This is about, there's a saying, you can't pour from an empty cup, right? Step 11 for me is where I am reminded that I need to fill me up inside. I have to do the things that fill me up as a human being, that make me feel alive, right? And eager to go through the day. Otherwise, why am I here? And for me, it was teaching myself how to watercolor. And it was building a garden, a vegetable garden for myself. And, you know, I'm teaching myself how to draw. And I'm probably never going to be great at it. And I don't care. I'm enjoying it. Right. And it's grabbing hold of those things that make me happy. You know, and happy is such a fleeting emotion for me that I grab hold of anything that brings me that spark, that little giggle inside, I guess is a good way to put it. You know, that little part of me that's still very hard for me to share with others. Step 11 is where I'm reminded to go plug that in and charge that up. It's never going to be easy for me to be in touch with my feelings, I don't think. I was raised by somebody who was very logical, didn't believe that emotions were important. I was trained well with that very early on. And yet, it's happening a little bit at a time. So I have hope. And mostly that's what recovery is about for me, is hope. And step 11 is where I started getting my hope back in a large way. Next slide, please. Step 12. I am a service junkie. I'm just going to say that right up front. I'm a service junkie. Now, if you want to find out if you're working a good program or not, do one of two things: get into a brand new relationship with another human being or start doing service work. Guaranteed, you will find out where you are lacking in your program. So 2 years ago, I started a face-to-face meeting, and then the pandemic hit, and I ended up co-founding We Agnostics. And We Agnostics started as one little lonely telephone meeting with nine people. And I hated hosting a telephone meeting, and I'm a very selfish human being in a lot of ways. And so I transitioned it over to a Zoom meeting, which is much easier to host. And all of a sudden we have three meetings, and we meet Thursday night, Sunday night, and Tuesday morning. And I'll talk about that in a few minutes. We Agnostics is probably the greatest experience I've had in recovery. I have met so many phenomenal people, and I have stressed so much, and I have angsted so much, and I have learned how to delegate and ask for help. And I have learned a little bit more about how to build community, because community is what's keeping me going. So what else to say about step 12? I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor. I have a service sponsor. I've done volunteer work at the world service level. I think our literature is critically important. And so I volunteer to review literature so that the atheist, agnostic, free thinker point of view can be brought into our literature process. And not everybody is cut out to do the amount of service that I do. So what I also want to say is service is also just showing up at a meeting. Because if people don't show up to meetings, then meetings aren't going to be there. And volunteering to chair a meeting is service. And speaking in a meeting is service. And learning how to host a Zoom meeting is service. There are so many different levels of service. And service is what has driven my recovery to a new level. So I really, really, really encourage service. Gosh, that's the steps. So Kyle, what's the next slide? We Agnostics, this is our meeting schedule. I said I'd mention it. Thursday night, 6 p.m. at Eastern Standard Time. Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tuesday at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The Zoom ID and password are the same for all three meetings. Thursday night is a step study meeting. We just go from step to step to step to step to step and back again. Sunday night is a literature study. We look at the laundry list items, we look at the steps, and we look at the traditions. And Tuesday morning is our newest meeting, and it's a little different. It's what we call an express meeting. We don't do any literature study in that meeting. That meeting on Tuesday morning is probably the brutalist, most gut-wrenching meeting I've ever been to, and it has rapidly become my favorite. All we talk about in that meeting is how we're feeling at the moment that morning. That's it. And there's been a lot of conversation about the fact that my stepdad is going through cancer for me. I have really been working it hard to stay in touch with my emotions through all of that. And that Tuesday morning meeting has really helped me do that. So everyone is invited at a We Agnostics meeting. Kyle, next slide. Oh, and the information about the meeting is in the downloadable handout that you can get Brad, if you were kind enough, or Anna, if you were kind enough, could maybe put the link for the downloads in the chat area. But we do have a download for this session, and it has in it all five of the steps that we read at the We Agnostics meetings for each step, as well as our recommended book list. And it also has the meeting information in the download. Next slide, please. All right, so I tried to get us at least a solid half hour of Q&A in case people wanted to ask questions. I'm really, really new to the webinar, and I've worked really, really hard to not follow the chat. So Brad, how do we do Q&A during this? And Kyle, if you would turn off the slides, thank you.
Yeah, we could just have people raise their hands and ask questions. We could have people type them in the Q&A. However you want to roll is fine with me.
Why don't we have people raise their hands?
Great. Just click the raise hand, and you can and we can call on you.
All right. Thanks. Erica?
I was just going to say, we had a couple questions come in during the presentation.
Okay.
I'm wondering if you might want to start with those. We had, for step five, why does it have to be a shared inventory? Why can't we keep it to ourselves?
Oh, that's a really good question. And, you know, I got my introduction to 12-step recovery in Texas, okay? I went to AA for 10 years before I figured out I wasn't the alcoholic in the family. And what they used to do in Texas is they would go across the border into Mexico and they would pay somebody who didn't speak English to listen to their fifth step, because it is getting it out of your brain. Okay. I talk about it in terms of the gerbil on the wheel. Okay. And the gerbil on the wheel goes zzzz, and it just goes round and round and round and round and round. And when I speak my fear, okay, I get it out of my head and it doesn't have as much power behind it anymore. It doesn't make it go away. This is about lessening the power that this shit has over us. And speaking it out loud helps that. That's the simplest answer to that.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that, that if you genuinely feel terrified to speak it out loud, write it down first. That's a good intermediary step to speaking it out loud.
Next, Erica.
The other one that we can really answer in this setting I had written down already is about your 10th step inventory. Do you have a sheet that you could share with us or with the group?
I hadn't thought about that. Yes. So We Agnostics keeps a Google Drive where we have all of our handouts and readings and everything. It's not on the Google Drive right now. I can work to put it up on the Google Drive. So if, poor Colleen is going to hate me for saying this, if you email weagnosticsacoa@gmail.com, Colleen would be kind enough to respond to your email. One of the things I did for myself was give up control of the email. Yay, me. And Colleen handles it for us. But yeah,
Colleen is actually in the meeting and she said that she won't hate you. So I think you're good. So, hey, Colleen.
Thank you. So any other questions, Erica, that we can?
We had a question about sharing the transcript from the meeting today. We can share the slides, and I know a couple of us have typed drafts of what we're going over, but.
Yeah, the transcript is, I know the recording is going to be available. Brad, is the transcript available?
That's a touchy thing because.
Okay.
Normally, if this was a normal meeting, we'd start the meeting and stop the meeting, and then there'd be a transcript. But what's happening is the recording starting, the recording stopping, and I don't have a lot of hope that the transcript is going to be good. So I think that may have to be a loss for this one.
Okay. Thank you, Brad. I wasn't sure. Most of us are pretty open about sharing what we've written or what we've talked about. And again, if you email weagnosticsacoa@gmail.com, we can get into an email discussion about that with you, whoever you are specifically that might want the transcript. Brad, do we have any hands raised? Catherine has a hand raised.
Hi, Julianne. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Thank you so much. It's been really interesting hearing you speak, hearing all the speakers actually in this workshop. I went through, I'm probably about in step 10 of ACA, but I had to forgive my mother, and I did make an amends to her. I can't make an amends to her because she has dementia, but I did make an amends to her for being who she was and not being capable of being a mother, being a good mother, trying. I mean, she was overwhelmed. My father was an alcoholic. She was a codependent or a narcissist. I don't know what she was, but she was never there for me. But she relied heavily on me when my father committed suicide when I was 15. So she used me a lot. But in my 30s, I became close to her, and I finally got through that amends. It was so hard, though. And my sponsor told me I was the worst ACA person she's ever come in contact with because I didn't want to give it up. You know, I didn't want to do the amends. I was hanging on to the amends, and I thought, if you knew my whole story, you wouldn't say that. So I love the honesty. I love the openness of this workshop. And I just, you know, being gentle with yourself, forgiving what maybe I failed to do or what I did do as a child is not something I want to focus on in my life right now. I need a lot of catching up to do. I wasted a lot of life, like you were talking about. And the last thing I want to do is spend it in my childhood. So moving forward, I am getting through this process, but I think the amends to people that have hurt me in the past is, it's a rough one. So thanks for your comment on that.
Thanks for sharing, Catherine. You were heard. We have some, I don't know who puts the hands down. We have some questions in the Q&A box. So I thought I'd kind of run through those real quick. For me, I believe in the inclusive type belief, including the fact that God exists and the fact that God does not exist. This type of belief is true for me at all times and in all ways, including all possible veins of ideas that are out there or in me. The question, why is this belief rejected by both secular and non-secular alike? I have no answer because I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I was thinking, hey, those of you that are overseas, we have that 7 a.m. meeting, and we've had people from Turkey and a couple of other places join us at that the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. We are open to adding another We Agnostics meeting. If people want to do that, just contact us. I feel like a broken record, weagnosticsacoa@gmail.com. What meeting would you suggest for a newcomer? You know, there's some, the Ready, Set, Go is out there. There's some really good newcomer stuff that ACA has. If you're asking specifically for a secular newcomers meeting, I don't know of one. We agnostics are, we have a lot of people that show up at the We Agnostics meetings who it's like their first ACA meeting ever. And we're very welcoming and, understanding and supportive.
Julianne, out of the three agnostic meetings, we had a question on which one would you suggest out of the three that we have? Sunday or Thursday?
I think Thursday. Thursday's not, oh crap, as soon as I say this, it's going to change. Thursday's not as big as Sunday. Thursday, we do pure step study. And I have a firm belief that getting a foundation in the steps is important. The laundry list items are important. And, you know, you're going to deal with your laundry list items when you get to step 6 and 7. And if you understand the steps, then, you know, you're going to get the laundry list stuff. So I would recommend Thursday night of our meetings. Can we listen? And that meeting, that question, I think was gone. Okay, somebody else must be also dealing. All right, please send me the slides. That's not my question because I don't know how. Oh, you mean the slides that we used in the presentation? Please email weagnosticsacoa@gmail.com. Download the handout that has actually the information that were on the steps from the slides. Agnosticism seems like the edge of believing in God, but what if my mind is made up that there is no higher power? Even agnosticism is triggering for me. What do you say about that? I'm an atheist.
Yeah, I think you're misunderstanding the word agnostic.
Yeah.
Agnostic simply means I can't say authoritatively that there is or isn't a God. It doesn't mean that you're on the edge of believing God. It's just a more neutral word. Most of us are atheists, but the word agnostic is more inclusive.
It actually comes from AA Agnostica. And it's kind of an omad. I actually wanted to call it Good Without God, and I got talked out of it. So it's an homage to AA Agnostica. My mother, who's, you know, I said 36 years sober in AA, does a lot of service work. And the We Agnostics meeting was attempted to be delisted here in Indianapolis, where I live, and she fought to keep it from being delisted. And so AA has AA Agnostica. And there's NA Agnostica. And so We Agnostics is my homage to agnostic and atheist meetings that came before us.
So. We have a lot of people with their hands up. Do you think we might take a question?
Yes, please.
Stefan.
Hi, Stefan.
Hi. Thank you so much for this topic. I was... years ago, when I came to ACA, I didn't get the God. The God that didn't answer my prayers as a child, were also didn't mean anything to me. And as an adult, and the steps were just like out the window. And I tried the White Buffalo steps. I tried the atheist steps that I found, and Buddhist steps. I did this huge search. None of them were working for me. So I ended up writing my own. And which actually helped me accept many other versions because I knew the truth of what they meant to me. And there was a meeting that I was asked to lead, a 20-minute lead. And not only did I read the steps that I wrote, but I also said that instead of a higher power, I called it my inner power, because I believe that a lot of religion is trying to take my power away. It's trying to say that I'm not good enough, that I need something outside of myself in order to be whole. And I actually had an intervention. Two fellow travelers said, hey, let's go for coffee, and tried their best for an hour and a half to try and talk me into believing in something that I didn't believe in. So I'm really, really, really glad you guys are around. The three meetings they don't really work with my schedule. So I hope that there's another one, but I will keep my ear to the ground. And when another one opens up that does fit my schedule, I'll be there with bells on. Thank you so much for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you very much. When I get cornered on, well, you have to believe in something. My power greater than myself is gravity. Because man, let me tell you, in the fight between me and gravity, gravity wins every time. Who's okay. Next, Brad?
How about Diane C?
Hi, Diane.
Hey. Hi. I didn't really mean to raise my hand, but since I did, apparently, I do have a question.
Okay.
So I'm relatively new, and I was very confused when I first started because of the ACA 12 steps. And particularly the step where you make amends, I felt immediately that that was wrong. And then it took me about, I don't know, 2 months of meetings before I realized that they were really following Tony A's 12 steps, which feel much more appropriate for me. And I just don't understand why it's so confusing to newcomers, you know, with all the different steps out there. So that was it. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you. One of the reasons why we read five different versions of the steps at our meetings is because not every version resonates with every person. And so, you know, who's next, Brad?
How about Zoe?
Okay. Hi, Zoe.
Hi, Julianne. I want to start by saying a heartfelt thank you for this. I really love your interpretation of the steps. And it's exactly what I've been looking for. I've found alternative versions in other fellowships, but this is really the fellowship I need to be in more than anything else, more than any other at the moment. I wondered, I'm in London in the UK. I've struggled to find atheist or agnostic meetings in the UK. I just wondered if you had any links over here where I could attend secular meetings in ACA. And the second question, which I noticed people have put in the chat box, was, have you got an alternative step working guide that links with your interpretation or version of the steps? I've forgotten what you called it now, the 12 protocols for living.
Wow. Okay. So how to answer this gracefully within an ACA meeting. I would love to have a dedicated We Agnostics European meeting. We'll just go there first, because I think that would be really neat. And it doesn't even have to be a We Agnostics meeting. We would be pleased to share everything that we've put together, our script, where we've changed things in the promises so they're secular. I mean, we've made changes so that it's friendly and open to a secular perspective while maintaining the fact that that we are an ACA meeting. We would be happy to share that with anyone who wanted to start a meeting somewhere else and wanted it to be a secular meeting. As far as a step guide, it's being written, and with that, I'll pass.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I will say I work on the IT, and they just added a text search. So now it's not just click the secular button, but you can do a text search and search for terms like agnostic as well as a secular or atheist.
Which is awesome, because a lot of people have used the drop down menu and tried to go for a secular meeting, and they really weren't secular meetings. They just checked the box saying they were secular. So, and that's frustrating. Who's next, Brett?
Let's see, Erica.
Hi, Erica.
Hi. Can I just say I'm always used to being the only Erica in the room. So having one on your panel has been like, I keep turning around suddenly. Really loving this panel. Absolutely. I was raised secularism, free thought, epistemology. That's like the only good thing my family gave me. And so when I go to meetings, there's this, I have to feel like I have to get rid of the only good thing I had from my childhood. And my question is, I am in a step study group, and we are working these steps, and I love the people in my group. Absolutely wonderful people, really, some are religious, some are spiritual. And when I'm struggling with this stuff, they just don't get it. It's like, they don't seem to understand that I can be okay without having a concept of something, having a God or a force outside of me that has control over shit. So I was hoping you could speak with how to integrate this. I will attend your meetings, trust me, on it. But how to maybe integrate taking this into my regular group, because I don't want to give them up.
Yeah. And thank you. Oh, you're welcome. And I do understand that. Does your meeting that you like have a regular group conscience meeting?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I just have to ask for it.
Okay. Well, one of the things that you could do is we have people that come to our group conscience meeting, and over time they have brought up things like, crosstalk. That was triggering for somebody. We don't call it crosstalk anymore. Spirituality is triggering. We don't call it spirituality anymore. We talk about the essential self. Serenity prayer was triggering. The word prayer was triggering. So now we call it the serenity affirmation. You know, there are things that we have done where we have worked to accommodate people. And these are all things that have been brought up in our group conscience. And because we started as a secular meeting, of course, for us, it's been easier. Start talking about it in the group conscience. And if you want to talk about how to talk about it, we have an after meeting, after our Sunday and Thursday night meeting, and we would love to chat with you about it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How about Leia?
Sounds good. Oh, hey, while I'm thinking about it, I want to do a shout out to Kyle. Kyle, thank you so much for running our slides for us. I really, really appreciate it. I also know Kyle has to leave early, so I wanted to say something to him. Leah.
There, Leah, ACA. Just wanted to say a big thank you, really. Stayed up a little bit late for me. And just to hear you go through the steps was wonderful. And the language. And to be honest, for me, it's about the inclusivity. And I think it's wonderful. But also, especially when it came to talking about step 9 and amends to self being the first round, I've heard similar veins around the Tony A steps, you know, the first round for the inner child. And so I love the way this is like you're including all these different aspects and bringing them together for people to find their own way. It's really refreshing. And I hope to see you real soon.
Thank you.
The email's already been sent.
Thank you. Yeah, I've actually been watching the notifications pop up on my phone and it's like, poor Colleen. Who's next?
Thanks, Brad. So much.
Devin. Is up.
All right.
Hi, I'm not sure what it, there we are.
There you go.
Thank you. I am damn excited. I want to thank you very much, every one of you. And wow. I am very interested in finding somewhere that I can believe anything I want to believe, and that can evolve at any time, because I constantly evolving. And I'm excited about not being force-fed anything, because I did go through the whole religious abuse, you know, and I also went through losing everything in the 80s for being gay and all kinds of stuff. So, you know, I just want to say it, so many things struck home for me. And I just didn't know that this was there. And I want to thank you for presenting and just raising awareness that there are alternatives and alternatives to alternatives. Just thank you very much for this.
You're welcome. Brad, when do we have to clear the room?
Well, I'll tell you what, we've got fun activities starting at 40 after. So there's this 10 minute block that we're really welcome to use.
Okay. Then who's next?
How about Carol?
There you go.
I had trouble unmuting me. I didn't see that. Yes. two things. One was in the download from the agenda.
Yes.
Are the slides included in that?
No, the slides are not included in the download. The download has our meeting information, the five different wordings of the steps, and a recommended alternative book list.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The other thing was that I did go to one of your meetings and was it really very comfortable for me, because I've been uncomfortable and for 35 years now going to ACA meetings with God, and especially the very religious people that get in there and say their higher power is Jesus. And they're so, you know, anyway, I don't mean to be sarcastic, but it just makes me want to throw up, because I don't think I could. I have learned in this program to trust myself and to look at myself for answers and listen to other people, but not look outside of myself all the time for the answers, not looking out to see how somebody else thinks, you know, I should do. And so I have sort of a running joke when people ask me if I have my higher power. It's chaos theory. So thank you for letting me share.
You're welcome. Thank you, Carol.
Okay. And we've got, I'm sorry if I'm saying your name wrong, Powell.
Powell, can you unmute yourself?
Why don't we move on? And if you can unmute mute yourself at some point, you could just say something.
Okay.
Let's see. Have we caught on Corey?
Hi. No.
Hi, Corey.
Thank you. Hi, I've attended a meeting before. There's a new program starting that uses internal family systems. It's internal mm-hmm. family systems informed. It's
mm-hmm. Oh, lost Corey.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm back again. Somehow I got muted.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so I've been attending an IFS-informed meeting that's new and is looking for some attendees. It has some different language, but it's really just a metaphor for saying the same things that we're all talking
Corey,
about.
Is it an ACA meeting?
Yes, it is an ACA meeting. Okay. And it is informed by this way of thinking. And it's not a higher power. You're really working towards your highest self or your best self. And really the way it works is that we think of ourselves maybe as a multiplicity, that there are parts
Corey,
of us.
Corey, do you have
that,
a question?
My question was if you would be interested in this being shared at all. I guess I just wanted to throw it out there as something that is an alternative.
You can always put the information in chat, and if people are interested, they can pick it up.
I put it on the Q&A. Is chat the place to maybe put it? I just wanted to say that.
Chat would be the place to put it.
Yeah, if anybody wants to contact me about
Thank
it,
you, Corey.
I think it's a nice helper. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Who's next, Brad?
Okay, we've got Melissa.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi there. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I can't. I don't have the option to bring my video up. Sorry.
That's okay.
Anyway, I really appreciate growth. Whenever I see growth in fellowship, I have spent my entire adult life in 12-step rooms, so I am no stranger to difference, indifference. Anyway, I really appreciated your qualification and perspective, and I'm really glad I came to this meeting. I do know that. I remember in my adolescence, I really had resentful feelings around the ideals of religion and God, and I couldn't grasp any kind of connection, because it wasn't my mentality wasn't broadened yet in development, and it wasn't tangible, and so. You know, just being so outside of feelings was hard enough outside of anger. Where am I going as far as the question is concerned? I'm trying to think of how can I fit the suit here as far as question. I'm wondering about within the ideology of hey, this is a program of recovery about healing from trauma and childhood abuse and abandonment and neglect and the dysfunctionality that came about from that. I guess I'm trying to find, like, what's my question? I'm sorry if I seem a little ADD here, but like how to reach people. And for me, like me as a Filipino American, I've had quite a journey with my understanding of a power greater than me. Excuse me if I'm triggering to anybody, but you know, this is part of language. I try to be a literalist when it comes to vocabulary. How to be just very inclusive to all walks of life, because as a Filipino American, there's just that, you know, I'm in a place now in my recovery where internalized racism is huge. It's huge. And it's because I'm Americanized, I'm third generation. And being Americanized, I was very much abandoned by culture and by history. And I'm very biracial. So, I mean, I was raised by white women, you know, throughout a lineage of white women. And so, just how to be more inclusive of honoring different cultural theories around spirituality. Excuse me if that's a triggering word for anyone.
Are you familiar with the Committee for Representation, Equity, and CREA? It's called CREA.
Accessibility.
Thank you, Brad. I couldn't bring it up. That sounds like something that if you volunteered for would be right up your alley, because that's what they're working on.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I don't want to.
Thank you for pointing the finger.
Yeah, no, I don't want to blow you off or anything, but yeah, I don't want to blow you off or anything, but that is specifically what they are working on.
Yeah, I mean, because it is I love the idea here of this meeting, and I would love to be able to give reference to, you know, some people in my step study group struggling in their connection with power, the idea of power, because, you know, it's the idea is that, you know, we're all looking for internal power. And for me,
I get that.
And there's also loving parents. So yeah.
There's also a great book by Claudia Black called Double Duty.
Okay.
You're going to have to like go to a used bookstore to get it. It's incredible. And she talks about that too. And Claudia Black's part of the beginnings of ACA.
Yeah.
Kyle,
you're
welcome.
I don't want to like hog the stage here. So thank you so much for your perspective. And again, for your qualification.
You're welcome. Kyle, I asked in chat if you would be able to pull up the We Agnostics version of the Promises. I don't know if you saw it or not. If you can, that would be great. I'm mindful of our time. We're not going to get, I think, to more people. And I would love to close us out with our version of the Promises, if you have it, Kyle.
One moment, please.
Thank you. Erica, would you like to read the Promises for us?
Sure. Are they coming up on screen?
Yeah, Kyle's going to go grab them off of the Google Drive.
Computer's chugging along here. Please excuse me.
Yeah, I caught him off guard. I apologize for that. Mm-hmm. But I want to be mindful of our time and close the meeting. And I figured the Promises would just be a good way to do it.
And
Brad, thank you very much for teching for us. And Anna, thank you very much for teching for us.
My pleasure.
There we go.
Erica?
All right. The 12 Promises, and this is a modified version. We will discover our real identities by loving and accepting ourselves. Our self-esteem will increase as we give ourselves approval on a daily basis. Fear of authority figures and the need to people please will leave us. Our ability to share intimacy will grow inside us. As we face our abandonment issues, we will be attracted by strengths and become more tolerant of weaknesses. We will enjoy feeling stable, peaceful, and financially secure. We will learn how to play and have fun in our lives. We will choose to love people who can love and be responsible for themselves. Healthy boundaries and limits will become easier for us to set. Fears of failure and success will leave us as we intuitively make healthier choices. With help from our ACA group, we will slowly release our dysfunctional behaviors. Gradually, with the help of others, we will learn to expect the best and get it.
Thank you, everyone on the panel who put this together with me. I appreciate you very much. And thank you, everyone who joined us today. And I apologize that we weren't able to get to all the questions today. Thank you
for being here. Thank you so much, Jillian and panel.
Thank you, guys.